And then they come back under Nehemiah, and so we're with that last group that comes back. And that's the kinds of things that we're talking about. Zerubbabel comes back, and they restore the temple. They build the temple. And so they've got temple worship. That's the work that Zerubbabel does. And then Ezra comes back, and he restores the worship. And so he helps them get the ability to use that temple that they've got there, and to have the right kind of worship in relationship to that. So we've got those individuals doing those kinds of things, but there's tremendous opposition. And so that's what we want to continue. We will start with chapter 5 tonight, and to look in Nehemiah. Chapter 5 is the section that we're looking at, because the Jews have come back, and in that land that is governed by Persia, before the Jews come back, they're the people that live in that land. And they're the beginning of the Samaritans. That's who they are, and that's where they come from. They're not called Samaritans at this time, but they are the Samaritans that are there. And now all of a sudden, the king of the world, Darius of the Medes and the Persians, says, any Jew that wants to can go back to that land. Hadn't been there for 70 years, at least 70 years. And now here is this number, massive number, relatively speaking, but 50,000 of them that show up to take over the land that the Samaritans have had. How would you like that? If all of a sudden somebody said, we're going to give all this land back to the Seminoles. I don't know if that's a good illustration or not, but all of a sudden you've got to get out of your house, and because now this land that flows with milk and honey, we're at least going to take part of it away from you, and we're going to give it back to these Jews who are coming back. And that's why they're really, really upset about the kinds of things that are happening. And we ought to expect that there will be that kind of problems that exist, and we'll look more at some of those. But first, in chapter 5, we read of some internal problems. You have internal problems anywhere? Have you ever heard of a home that had any internal problems? Maybe I ought to ask that the other way. Have you ever heard of a home that did not have internal problems? And sometimes, in the church, sometimes we think that internally the church ought never to have any problems. But it had problems from the very beginning. In fact, one of the first problem it had to do was, it was almost a racial problem, because whenever they were passing out the food to those who were in need in Jerusalem, the Grecian widows were being overlooked. Isn't that remarkable that the church has just begun, and now they've got problems in the church? And then after that you have the problems of circumcision, and after that you have all of these other problems. How many problems were there in the church at Corinth? The reality is not that you have problems. The reality is, how do you go about solving these problems? And that's part of what we'll be looking at tonight. And so let's get to chapter 5. And verse 1 says, there was a great outcry of the people and their wives against the Jewish brethren. What's the problem? There were those who said, our sons and our daughters are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live. But there were also who said, we don't have any money. We've mortgaged our houses, mortgaged our lands, mortgaged our vineyards. Now they've been back in the land. They came back with Zerubbabel. They have possessions that are there, but they've taken out loan on their properties. That ever happened to you? Here is this danger that they're having, and so we have mortgaged, and he talks about lands and vineyards and houses, that we might buy grain because of the famine. Well, this is the first time we read about the famine, but they are needing to have this grain. And there were also those that says, we have borrowed money for the king's taxes on our lands and our vineyards. Now all of a sudden we recognize that there are those who on behalf of the king have taxed the people. And we're going to learn that Nehemiah did not do that. He was the governor that was appointed to deal with this, but they had to pay these taxes because the governors that were there before Nehemiah arrived, the rulers that were there, collected money for the kings. And he says, you know who's taxing us? Those who are taxing us are the Jews. Those who are charging us usury on our money are the Jews. Are you aware the Old Testament forbade that? That the Lord said to the Jews in the Old Testament, you cannot charge your brethren taxes or charge your money interest on the monies that they have. And so Nehemiah addresses the problem, and look in verse 6 how he addresses it. I became very angry when I heard their outcry in these words. Nehemiah's evidently not been back very long, but whenever he hears this, look at his response. He says, I was angry, and after serious thought. Isn't that remarkable? How do you solve church problems? You don't just fly off the handle. You sit down and you soberly consider it. And he says, after serious thought, I rebuked the nobles and the rulers and said to them, each of you is exacting usury, that's high interest, from his brother. So I called a great assembly against them. And I said to them, according to our ability, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. Now indeed, will you sell them back and make them slaves again? Will you indeed sell your brethren, or should they be sold to us? They were silent, and they had nothing to say. I said to them, what you're doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations and our enemies? You know, sometimes, you know how you solve the problems? By going right through the middle of them. Sometimes that's the only way you can solve problems. You can skirt around and pretend there is no problems, but there are problems that need to be dealt with, and they've got to be dealt with immediately. And so he came right to the point. And he said, what you're doing is wrong. It's not right for you to do this. And then he said, now me and my brethren and my servants, those associated with Nehemiah, we've been lending them money and also giving them grain. Please stop charging interest. Please stop this usury. And then he says, restore to them this day. Give them back their lands and their vineyards and their olive groves and their houses, and also a hundredth of the money and the grain, the new wine and the oil that you have charged them. How'd that turn out? They said, Nehemiah, we'll do what you said. What a great leader he is in doing these things. And so he calls for them to restore the money and these things that have been taken to them. And I called the priest and made them give an oath from them that they would keep their promise, priests being the leaders of the people. Then I shook out the fold of my garment and said, so may God shake out each man from his house and from his property if he doesn't keep his promise. You made your promise that you would do it, and here's a visual representation. I'm shaking my garments of the whatever has collected in my garments, and God, may God shake you out of your land and out of your fields and out of your vineyards if you don't do it. Even thus may you be shaken out and emptied. And all of the assembly said, Amen. I was hoping Henry would be here. Henry is our brother who said, we don't say enough amens in this church. And Henry's a man who can count on always to have amens. In fact, we're going to find him again in the Bible tonight. It's all right to say amen. And so they said, so be it. And they praised the Lord. And look at that. Then the people did what they were told to do. Now look at Nehemiah's leadership and those who were around him. He first discusses what had happened in his reign, in his time of being the leader of the Jews. From the time that I was appointed to be the governor of the land of Judah, from the 20th year until the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes. Is that 22 years? It's 12 years, I'm sorry. Neither I nor my brothers have even eaten the governor's possession. We have not asked a single thing from you in taxation. the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine and charged them 40 shekels of silver. Yes, even their servants bore rule over the people, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. Indeed, I also continued to work on the wall. Still not up. And we did not buy any land. All of my servants were gathered there for the work. Remember when we listed last week in that study about all the different tradesmen that were involved in that work and where they came from? You want to be a leader? You got to be Nehemiah out there working on the wall. And Nehemiah and those who were around him who might have been given special privileges, me and my servants were gathered. In addition to that, there were 150 Jews and rulers besides those who came to us from the nations around us. And here's what we fed them. One ox and six sheep. Fowls were prepared for me, and once every 10 days, an abundance of all kinds of wine. That's remarkable. That's not a lot of food. If you go back and read the provisions that the king's people ate at other times, this is not a lot of food. I mean, you've got one ox to feed 150 people. I remember in New Zealand, being one of our early experiences in New Zealand, a woman there took a pound of hamburger meat and made 16 hamburgers. You know how you take, how you make 1 ounce patties? You use a fork. They're almost as big as they were, but I remember watching her as she took that fork, you know. She said, I can get 16 patties out of this. And that's like taking one oxen and feeding 150 people. And so he says, 150 Jews were there, and that doesn't count the visitors from the other nations around them. And I took one ox and six sheep and fed 150 of them. All he's trying to say is, I no longer will you be burdened by these taxes. Yet in spite of this, I do not demand the governor's provisions because the bondage was heavy upon these people. Leaders share in the adversity that's in the lives of those that they lead. And then here's a statement, and you find this several times. Remember me, my God, for good. I love that kind of prayer that says, God, I'm serving you, and remember me for the good that I've done. And this prayer is found more than once in the book of Nehemiah. Can we get to chapter 6? Chapter 6 goes back to these Gentile nations. And so there's Sanballat, and there's Tobiah, and Geshem. And then there's Geshem is the Arab. And the rest of our enemies heard that I'd rebuilt the walls. There were no breaks in it. And at that time, the gates have not been put in place. The wall's built, but there's still no gates. We're about to read a little bit later, but they only got the gates up. And so Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, let's meet together among the villages in the plains of Ono. But they thought to do me harm. One of the ways of keeping a work from succeeding is to stop the work any way you can. And so they said to Nehemiah, well, let's just meet out here and let's just talk about what's happening here. In your life, there are priorities that must be set. And sometimes the priorities are not, let's talk about it. I don't know if you've been in men's business meeting. That's what I think of. Men's business meetings when you don't have elders. And you can talk things to death in a men's business meeting. I remember, and I've told our elders about this, and they still talk about this sometimes, of the time that I sat in a men's business meeting, and there were leaves that had gotten on the out in the around the church building. And so they said, we have got to do something about all of these leaves that have fallen off the trees. And so the discussion became, do you use a rake? We call them leaf rakes, you know, that have wide things. And then there are those rakes that have a hard metal fork on the end, you know, the tines that hang down. And so for 45 minutes, I'm not exaggerating, we started at 5 o'clock, and so we tried to stop the meeting by 5:45 so we could have night services. And they spent the next 45 minutes discussing rakes. Which rake is the best kind of rake to be used? After 45 minutes, nobody had convinced anybody that what his idea of the kind of rake that ought to be used was the right kind of rake. And guess what we did not discuss? They never talked about when they were going to get the rakes, get the leaves off the property there. Come to the plains of Ono. Let's sit down and talk. And what? I sent messengers to them saying, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should the work stop? Why should I leave it and come down and talk to you? Sometimes we need to understand it's time to act. It's not time to talk. And they sent me this message four times. And four times I sent back the message in the same manner saying, I have got a greater work to do than the work that you're trying to talk about. It's so much easier when there are problems in the church, when there are problems in the home, to talk about things that really don't matter that much. Those leaves on that parking lot probably needed to be dealt with, but they probably could have been dealt with in 5 minutes. And thank God that we deal with leaves and everything. But how tragic it is when we address things and fail to address the things that need to be addressed. What about raising your children? It's a whole lot easier to talk with them, shall we go to Disney on Thursday or Friday, than to talk to them about the things that they need to be talked about in their lives. And Nehemiah is an illustration of that. There are things that are of such great importance. They just need to be dealt with and gotten out of the way. We mentioned before those widows in the church at Jerusalem. Was that a problem? Yeah, it was serious. It was a problem that could have threatened the unity of the church. You are overlooking our Grecian widows. You know what the apostles did? They didn't say, well, let's sit around and talk about it forever. They solved that problem by going right through the middle of it. But it was not the apostles who solved the problem. I mean, they gave the avenue by which the matter was to be solved. But the avenue was, you pick out some men among you that you feel can solve this problem. And they'll become the servants of the church in doing this. The word deacon is not used, but the idea of service is all the way through there. Almost the work of deacons. And so here are these men that occupy the work of in the place of deacons. And because the apostle says, there are things that are of greater importance than serving tables. I think it is interesting that the word tables there is the very word used in relationship to the tables of the money changers in the temple. Sometimes we focus so much on things that don't really matter, and that is on the money aspects of the church. that the other things really get in our way or are neglected in relationship to that. And so here are these apostles who Jesus called shepherds, or implied that they were shepherds, when he said to the apostles, "Feed my sheep." That has to do with shepherds feeding a sheep. And the apostle says, we're going to give ourselves to the Word of God and to spiritual matters. And we're not going to get bogged down in secular matters. One of the things that hinders the church, and I am thankful that our elders are aware of this, and oftentimes in elders' meeting they'll say, we need to get out of the way. This is something the deacons ought to do. And we need to give to those men who are. Do you think the apostles might have known where you could have bought that food better than the deacons could have known about? It's possible some of them could have. But the apostles said, we're going to get out of the way and we're going to let this thing be solved. And that's what Nehemiah said. The work that I'm doing is so much greater. Well, what does Sanballat do? We've mentioned his name several times. What does Sanballat do? He sent his servant to me as before, some messenger that had been communicating between Sanballat and Nehemiah. This is the fifth time, and he has an open letter in his hands. Open letter sometimes can create problems far greater than they should have been. This is not just a letter that was sent to Nehemiah. It's not a private letter. It's a letter that is open. Anybody that wants to can read it. So he arrives in the city, and so here's this open letter that he has. And here's what it says. It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says, you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the walls that you, Nehemiah, may be their king. Any truth to that? No, other than the truth that we are rebuilding the walls. And he says, and you have appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, we now have a king in Judah. Any truth to it? Not a word of truth. If you want to cause problems in a situation, then spread untruths. So here's this open letter that anybody can read, and that now there's a king in Judah. Now these matters, will we go back to the king? That's to Darius. Therefore, come, and let's sit down and talk about this. How are you going to handle that? I sent to him saying, there's no truth to what you've said. No such things as you saying is being done. You invent them in your heart. They were trying to make us afraid, saying, we can weaken their hands in the work, and it will not be done. If we can just create enough fear and enough unrest, we'll stop this wall from being built, and there'll be a failure among these Jews, these people who've come in among us to take our property. Then there's another problem. I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehotabel, who was a secret informer. And he said, well, if we don't meet in the plains of Ono, let us meet in the house of God. Let us go within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night, they will come to kill you. This guy's he's an informer. He's trying to sow unrest. And I said, I'm not going to do that. Should I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go into the temple. Why won't you go, Nehemiah? violates the law of God. The one place, the sanctuary, he said, you're trying to get me to violate the sacredness of that temple, but I'm not going to this. And then he says, then I perceived that God had not sent him to me at all, but that he came to me because of Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act the way and sin, so that they might have cause for an evil report, that they might reproach me. Remember how that last chapter closed? Remember me? Listen to the close of chapter 6, or the close of this paragraph in chapter 6. My God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat according to their works, and the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who would have made me afraid. We don't know how to pray. I think reading these Old Testament prayers ought to help us. God, I am doing my best. And God, remember me. Well, there are those individuals who are trying to destroy the very thing that I'm trying to do. God, remember them. Remember them not for the good that they've done. Remember them for the evil that they've brought. Is there somebody bothering you? Pray that God would remember them. How do you deal with situations where people treat you wrong? Vengeance is mine. I will repay. And the prayer of godly men in the Psalms, especially in David's writing, the man after God's own heart, David prays that God would take his sword in his hand and put on his armor and come and deal with David's enemies. You know what David said? Now, one-on-one, whenever that enemy was sick, I behaved myself as though I were his brother. I put on sackcloth, grieving for him. You know what the New Testament says? How do you deal with an enemy? They've got more power than you've got oftentimes. How do you deal with it? Turn that problem over to God. And that's what Nehemiah is doing. They're trying to get me to come to the plains of Ono, and they're bothering me, and every time I turn around, there's a message from Sanballat, and now there's this message out that they're going to come and kill me, and it's not going to happen. I'm not going into the temple. There's no way am I going to do that. God, will you remember these evil people for all the evil that they've done? How are you going to treat Sanballat? I want to pray that God will take care of him. If your enemy is hungry, what do you do? What do you do about the wrong when you want to go over there and slap him in the face for what he's doing? Turn that vengeance over to God. Vengeance is mine. I will repay. And so if your enemy's hungry, feed him. Why? Because there's nothing that they can do that would cause us to do wrong toward them. You know how that chapter ends? Be not overcome of evil. Overcome evil with good. That's how you handle it. Yeah, but he's getting away with it. He's not getting away with it. Remember Sanballat, O God, for the work that he's done. Who'd you rather be on the day of judgment, Nehemiah or Sanballat? The same prayer was prayed for both of them. Remember Sanballat for what he's done, and remember me for what I've done. On the day of judgment, that's the way it's going to be. What do you do about that anger? You turn that feeling of anger over to somebody who not only can do something about it, but always has done. In reference to the Old Testament, the Hebrew writer says, every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense for reward. And when the final line is drawn, you can turn the other cheek, and he didn't get away with a single thing. Love, that's agape. I'm not talking about an emotion. I'm talking about an action. There's nothing that enemy can do that would cause you to do wrong toward them. Can I tell you something? And don't you ever forget it. It's always right to do right. Nehemiah, you got a decision to make. You got to deal with Sanballat. You got to deal with Tobiah. You got to deal with these people who are threatening to kill you. What are you going to do about it, Nehemiah? I'm going to do right. Jesus, in that mockery of the trial, what are you going to do, Jesus? I could call, you know, legions of angels that Jeff talked about in that invitation. But I'm going to do right. Well, what about the fact they're getting away with it? They will not get away with it. There was that time in my life when I went in to get my car and they were charging me for an exorbitant amount. I discussed it with them. I told them that, you know, it's not right for you to do that. But I said, you got the upper hand. You've got the keys to my car. I need my car. And this is what I said to the guy. I'm going to pay you because you say that's what I owe you. I'm going to pay you that amount. And I'm going to walk out of here with my car knowing what you and I both know, what you've done. But there's a day of judgment in which you will face God for the way you've treated me. Now, he was not 6'5" and weighed 270 like a linebacker. I want you to know that. But that's not a bad thing to say. I walked out of there satisfied that I'd done whatever I could in relationship to what was happening in my life. But I wanted him to know that he had not pulled the wool over my eyes about the things that he had done. I didn't know what else to do. Didn't know what else to do. And that's what Nehemiah does. The work that I'm doing is so great that I just cannot get sidetracked. So the wall was finished. Now, if you take the dates that are given in Usher's dating of the Bible, they've been back 70 years. That's why I question whether that date is really the right date or not. They've been back 70 years. And Nehemiah, with the leadership that he provided that, the wall was finished in 52 days. You remember how we talked about how everybody got in, did their part from this gate to that gate and from this point to that point? And when you get the people with the mind to do work, you can accomplish that. And they accomplished it in 52 days. It happened that when all of our enemies heard of it and the nations that were around us saw these things, they were very disheartened in their own eyes. They perceived that we were so great at what we were doing. No, they perceived that God had done this work. In those days, the nobles sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them, for many in Judah were pledged to him. He doesn't even have support of all of his people. because he was the son-in-law and he's got all of these connections by marriage with some of the Jews who are down in that land, and they reported his good deeds before me and reported my words to him. Tobiah sent letters to them to frighten me, but I was not frightened. Chapter 7, verse 1, and the bell will ring here in just a minute. When the wall was built, I hung the gates. When the gatekeepers and the singers and the Levites had been appointed, I gave the charge in Jerusalem to my brothers Hanani and Hananiah, the leader of the citadel, that's the fortress. He was a faithful man and feared God, and I said to them, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be open until the sun is hot, and stay guard and stand guard. Let them shut and bar the doors and appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, one of them at his watch stations and another in front of me. Why? The city was large. There's nobody living in it. I find that remarkable. We've talked about this. When it came time to decide who'd live in the city of Jerusalem, they drew straws, and whoever lost, they cast lots, to use the biblical words, and whoever lost had to go to Jerusalem. But had there not been this attitude of these individuals who had come back, it would not have done. So, look at the rest of chapter 7. And you start reading about verse 6 and verse 7 and look at how is every verse for the next 45 verses or so talks about who came back during that time. We'll need to stop tonight, and that's where we'll take up next week. If you need some Easter eggs, they're out there. If you need them for that junior high thing this Saturday, be aware that these Easter eggs are out there. I forgot to make that announcement a moment ago. You are dismissed right now.